You have to do the hard things. You have to push yourself, because we know when you push yourself so hard physically that it makes you stronger mentally and it prepares you for the worst case scenario.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the TNQ podcast. I'm your host, Marcus Luttrell. Every week, it's my job to fire you up, to ignite the legend inside of you, and to push you to your greatness. Join me every week as I take you into my briefing room with some of the most hard-charging people on the planet. They're going to show you how to embrace the suck of life, teach you the values of working your ass off, and charge through whatever life throws at you. This is the Team Never Quit podcast. So buckle up, Buttercup.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Team Never Quit podcast. As always, thank you guys for listening and watching, and please don't forget to hit that like and subscribe button wherever you get your show. So today, before we get to our amazing guest, let's kick it off with our weekly Patreon question of the week. And this week we have, what is the first thing you do once you get back home from a trip?
The first thing that I do when I get home is greet my dogs.
Oh, that's a good one. I think that's the first too.
That's the first thing that happens.
Yeah.
Right? Okay.
That's the absolute first thing that does happen. Absolutely. You're right.
Sure.
I think the first thing I do is probably take a nap. I'm always so tired after a trip.
I hear you. That's probably my second, Melanie.
Yeah, I just need to lay down.
Yeah.
What about you? What are you doing?
I would say I go through my suitcases in my room, don't even unzip it, and I go sit down on the couch with the boys and watch a movie.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I immediately go outside and walk around.
Yes.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. He
go mow.
I immediately go outside and walk around and reacclimate to where I'm supposed to be.
Yeah, he just...
It doesn't matter what time I get in, midnight, 1 a.m., 2 a.m., it doesn't matter. I get and have to... that in the shower.
You do take a shower.
And the shower is kind of a thing.
Yeah, awesome.
Washes the airplane off.
Exactly.
Yes.
Go outside to put the new one on, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
That's my pattern.
Julie, can you share your story from the beginning? Because it's an incredible.
First, we'd like to know a little bit about your background, where you come from. Like, where were you born, if that's all right?
Yeah, sure. I was actually born in Ohio, just east of Cleveland. So I grew up there, the youngest of three girls. I used to fight a lot when I was young. I know that will surprise Melanie. But it was mostly with the boys, and mostly the boys and my girls in my sister's grade. So, so I grew up in Ohio. I went to Cleveland State. I was studying education. I was also competing internationally in sports. So I moved to Chicago to go to school there and also to train. I ended up becoming a personal trainer. So I did that for a long time, and I had the good fortune of working with some really amazing people, a couple professional athletes. I'm really proud of them.
Trainer in athletics or in the gym, or what are we talking about?
Yeah. So a lot of speed and agility work. I worked with a couple of the Cleveland Cavaliers, Steve Kerr and Craig Elo back then, and some other elite athletes. I lived in Chicago a little bit, moved back to Ohio. I also lived in Atlanta for a couple years. And finally, I woke up one day and I said, if there was anything I could do, what would it be? And it was to be a police officer. And I had put that on the back burner for a lot of reasons, but I ended up taking the plunge. I worked in Ohio. I was one of two female officers in an agency with 125. They had one standard, and either you met it or you didn't, which I really like. So I spent nearly 3 years there. I got tired of policing in the snow, and I ended up moving to Arizona.
That's a different kind of police force. You have police in your family?
I do. So both of my uncles were police officers, and my brother-in-law was a police officer.
That's a big deal for y'all up north. And New York does that a lot too. You're either a firefighter or a police officer.
Yes. Yep.
And
for sure.
You have some background in martial arts too, don't you? Didn't you do hand-to-hand?
I do. So I actually started training in martial arts when I was 5. I did it on and off until I was about 13 and really haven't quit since then. So
you can't really quit that.
Mm-hmm. No.
Because once it gets in there, you can't pull it out. It's a learn. Yeah. What really gets to you is when, if you train for a little bit and you stop, you know that there's a feeling that goes with that. You're like, oh, I know I need to get back in the gym. Right. And you can always get better. And then the ebb and flow of that is great. Because that part never leaves you either. Right. That's the tricky part about training in the martial arts is once you start that and you pause for a second, that still stays in there.
Right, right. You totally get it, Marcus. And I'll tell you, quite honestly, my best never quit stories would have been during my martial arts training. And because of those never quit moments, that's how I was able to survive, you know, the stabbing that I incurred.
Yeah. I remember you on the video that you had shared, you had talked about that. And there's so many people that can benefit from martial arts. I mean, really, anybody, and to start them young builds a confidence in them that just never leaves. You always have that you can protect yourself.
Well, as it's grown throughout the ages, it's got a stigma for it's a fighting thing. It always revolves around fighting. There is a way. It's an actual way of life, just like you study anything else, and that helps get you through life. It teaches you about your body, how your body moves, in nature, how your body moves against other forces in nature. And then it's also, it builds confidence. It's part of the whole process. And if you skip a process, you can still run into problems with it. It's just that you're not prepared. That's what that is.
Right.
Anything about that. It's like, hey man, you know, it's part of life. In the beginning, you don't like it, but trust me, it's good for you.
Right. And I think in addition to the confidence, and I think that's the biggest thing, Marcus, but I think the discipline that comes with it is second to none.
I remember the moms and dads showing up with their kids being like, hey, I take them to this guy for discipline, especially the moms. Because in my family, dad gave you discipline, your mother gives you manners. That's how that worked. And if they didn't have one of those components, oh, don't worry. There's a dude down the road that does that for a living.
Right.
You can put him in a uniform and put him in there and he'll whip his ass for you. That's what you're paying for. You're paying for that dude to put your kid in check with discipline. Trust me, there are the bulls out there that are designed for that. That's the best thing. I think it's so good for the kids. I remember that was a valuable lesson.
So with you, you got tired of being in the snow and you moved down to Arizona.
Yeah. So I moved out to Arizona and then I was tired of being in the heat. So I said, well, I'll do my 20 years and then I'll retire. And I got to my 15, and this is kind of ironic. I know you had our friend Marsha Petrie-Sue on recently, and Marsha actually did a ride along with me. And she said, well, you have a year to go. And I said, yeah, I just hope I can get through it unscathed. And I really had a feeling then that I didn't think I would, you know, but I was lucky to that point for sure.
Okay. So take us back to that morning.
Every day I put on my Tempe police uniform, I spoke some version of the same mantra, which is, I accept and expect that I will be involved in a lethal encounter today, and I will do everything I can to ensure my survival. Now, as I was saying that to myself, I just had this persistent and eerie feeling that something was going to happen. And I never had that before outside of work. And so as I prepared, I did a few things differently. Kind of funny, I'll backtrack to about a year prior to, I was at dinner with a friend, and somehow or another, and we were at work, she reveals that she doesn't have on a bra. And she said, it's just so much more comfortable. She said, you know, the vest holds the girls in place and it's all good. Well, about a year prior to this incident, I had gotten these new sports bras. And so I was at work. It was probably 115 degrees out. By the time I got home, the seams had dug in and I had these welts from that. So the next day was my Friday. And I said, I'm not going to wear a bra to work. And so I didn't. And it turns out Steph was right. It was way more comfortable. The vest held the girls in place and I was all good. So I hadn't worn a bra to work for a year. And this morning I actually put on a bra and I also pinned my hair back. And so that will come up again in this story. But anyway, I get to work. My first call out of the shoot was uneventful. Second call is with a good friend of mine, Latasha Hampton. It's a call where a victim reaches out to her sister via text and attempted to call her, telling her that she needed help. Well, the sister didn't retrieve the message for a couple of hours, and she tried to reach the victim and couldn't. So the sister got with her boyfriend, and they continued to try to reach her. She ended up getting a text that said, "We went to the movie theater." Well, it was early in the morning, so they went to the movie theater. They didn't find them there. So the boyfriend went over to the apartment. He heard talking, and when he knocked, he heard what he believed was a scream. And then he didn't get a response, so he contacted us. I was the first on scene, and I spoke with him. I asked him about a history of family violence. He said there wasn't one, and that actually the suspect in this case was a really nice guy. Gathered intel from dispatch about, you know, the history in the apartment. They had just moved there, so we didn't have anything to go on there. Both cars were in the parking lot. So when my backup got there, she also had a bad feeling. So she leaned into me and she said, "I'm going to start running my recorder." And she went to run the plates on the vehicle to get a physical on the suspect in this case. And once we had all the information that we could gather from dispatch and from running the plates, we contacted neighbors. We know we knocked and announced on the apartment door over 17 times because of Latasha's recorder. The neighbors said they didn't see or hear anything out of the ordinary. So at one point, Latasha went to the back of the apartment, and this complex is in the flight path of the airport. So they have triple pane security glass that's soundproof on the back. And she summoned me back there. I went back and she said, "I hear reggae music turning on and off." And as we stood there, she said, "Wait, did you hear that?" And I said, "No, what?" And she said, "I hear him unraveling duct tape." So not only was she able to hear that through the soundproof glass, but she was able to identify what it was. So at that point, I start making my way back around to the front of the complex, and I'm intercepted by a frantic man who's actually holding a cell phone, and he's saying, "Officer, officer, I received a message from my daughter, and all it says is I love you," and not that that's not great to hear, but I'm really concerned. And I told him we were really concerned as well. But that we were going to do everything we could to make sure she was okay. And obviously it turns out that was her father. I requested additional units and asked for the proper equipment, a Halligan tool, battering ram and shield would be on the way because we knew we couldn't breach through the back door. And we had a steel security gate on the exterior of the front wooden door. I don't know if I asked or if he just produced it, but Dad ends up giving me a tire iron, but the darn thing's like only this long. So I go, and as we're waiting for backup, I start trying to pry open that steel security gate. And I notice that my heart rate and respiration and perspiration are going up, and I start consciously trying to slow my breathing. And as I'm prying the gate, Latasha asks me for the victim's name, and I tell her, and she started yelling in through that soundproof glass for her to hang on. And while I'm working on that door, all of a sudden I hear Latasha transmit that she's screaming for help inside the victim. And right at that time, I heard a noise behind me, and I step back, and thank God there's the cavalry. So we have three additional officers, a sergeant, and we have the Halligan tool, the battering ram, and a shield. And it was funny because I was hugging the wall to the building up front, and I warned him about a window that was overhead because I thought it could pose a threat. And I promptly looked at him and I said, "Okay, who's going less lethal?" And they looked at me like I was nuts. And I was like, "Well, that was stupid because we don't know what's going on. I know it's bad, but I'm not going less lethal." So sergeant steps up, he pounds on the door real quick. He actually ends up breaking open that steel security gate with the Halligan tool, and until it opened like a knife through butter, and no doubt because I had already done all the hard work on that. After Sergeant Dorn opens the door, my friend steps up. He starts hitting the door with a battering ram. The door won't open, but it's shattering all the lower panels to pieces.
Ever dreamt of the perfect combo? Imagine like a zero-calorie cheeseburger or something that just sounds too good to be true. Well, here's a gem for you. And it's looking sharp and stylish while still being super comfortable. I know, sounds a little too good to be true, but you gotta meet Mack Weldon, where style finally meets performance. Their apparel blends classic aesthetics with very comfortable fabrics, all while leaving you as confident as ever and looking sharp. Let me tell you, I have been wearing their black polo for weeks now. I literally can't take it off. I ordered two more. I just think the fit is so perfect. The color pops on the collar, and it doesn't even stop there. Every item on Mack Weldon's site is a winner. From breathable boxes to stylish crew necks, anything you want, they've got you covered. And don't take my word for it. Go see for yourself. Go head on over to MackWeldon.com and score 20% off your first order with our promo code TNQ. That's MackWeldon.com and use our promo code TNQ. Go elevate your wardrobe with Mack Weldon today, where timeless style looks modern and comfortable.
And after he hit it probably about eight times or so, he stepped back to discard the battering ram. I was next in the stack, so I was the first through the door. So as I crouch, I'm going from complete bright sunlight in Arizona to almost complete darkness because the suspect had shut off all the lights and drawn all the window shades. So as I'm stepping through, I see the sliding glass door on the other side of the apartment, and in front of it, there's enough light shedding through to create a silhouetted scene of the suspect standing over the victim, and he reaches high overhead and drops his weight twice. He spins, looks in my direction, and runs out of sight. So I said he's running, and he went to the right. So now I'm in a small entryway waiting for my guys to get in behind me. And I'm holding on a far corner because from the entryway, there's a bathroom a little bit behind me to my right. And then just a hair ahead of me, it opens into a kitchen. And then beyond that, the next corner is to the family room, which is where I saw the suspect. And he ran to the right. So I'm holding on that far corner, expecting a long threat. And I say, like I said, he's running. He went to the right. And the sergeant says, "Where is he now?" And I assumed he went to barricade himself in the back room or to escape. And so as I take one more step forward, turns out the suspect had leaped over a bypass from the family room into the kitchen. And so now he's standing on that near wall, waiting with a large hunting knife, unbeknownst to me. So as I take that next step, he leaps out with the knife overhead. And I mean, I have to tell you, it felt like evil had leaped out of the darkness at that point. It's funny how quickly you think, because I think he killed her. He's trying to kill me. And that's a really odd angle the knife's coming at. Actually, Marcus, you can appreciate this. It looked like a Chuck Liddell punch, a swooping punch with a knife on the end of it. So Tempe does a really good job of training our officers. If you see or even perceive a threat, you should be moving or moving to cover. So as he leaps out, I immediately start stepping to my right and canting my body. I'm extending my arm. And as soon as the muzzle of my gun touches his body and I fire my first round, the knife penetrates my neck just above my left clavicle. And between my first and second round, I sense this invisible wave of energy that launched me backwards. And as I was going through the air, I capped off my second round, crashed to the floor. I hit my head on the tile and I somehow injured my shoulder. But from there, thank God I didn't stand up. Instead, I sprung to my hands and feet and I scurried out that hole that we had created in the door. And I immediately ran to the cover that I had already identified prior to trying to open the steel gate. And when I turned around, my friend Ryan was there. And I knew I had to get out of the inside perimeter of this incident. The other officers stayed engaged and were also shooting to neutralize the threat. I went out to where I knew that fire would get to me. I requested fire and advised that I had been stabbed, and went out to an intersection. And we advised dispatch. There was a miscommunication between dispatch and fire, which was stressful because fire was directly one block south of us. So we knew they would be there within probably a couple minutes. And it didn't turn out that way. It was more like 11. So it was stressful sitting there. I thought I had been hit in the carotid.
Why was that?
There was a miscommunication, they said, between central dispatch and our fire department. Never really got an answer as to what happened.
Oh, I know what that means then. Go ahead. We all know what that means.
So, yeah. So I thought I was hitting the carotid because, you know, I was bleeding so profusely. It soaked through my shirt, was running down my pants and legs and into my boots. So I sat down, took off my vest. I had covered the wound with a rubber glove, and I started working on my tactical breathing to slow everything down so that hopefully I wouldn't bleed out. And then my friend stood in front of me and promptly said, "Julie, what do you want me to do?" And I said, "I want you to stop the bleeding." And so he ended up kind of sitting behind me and applying pressure. So that was real helpful. Some really interesting things happened. One is that the sergeant was the last to come through the hole in the door, and his eyes hadn't adjusted to the light. So when the suspect leaped out, he saw his arm extending, but I started shooting so quickly, he heard the gunfire. So he assumed that I had been shot. Well, he knew that we neutralized the threat by shooting him. And then he assumed the victim was shot. So he reported that three of us had been shot. Whereas my other friend, as he stepped in, he took his glasses off, his eyes adjusted. He saw him leap out with a knife, started shooting to neutralize the threat, but actually didn't know that I got stabbed. He had forgotten that I was even there. So at one point, they requested the battering ram to get in through the security door on the back to get to the victim. So as my friend was running around the building, he saw me sitting there, and my friend Ryan yelled to him that I had been stabbed, and he had no idea. So after breaking open the back door, he came over and helped to render aid. And Rich was really good. You guys could appreciate this. He said, "Well, let me see it." So, you know, we moved the covering, and he's like, "Ah, that's not bad." He said, "You're going to be fine." And he said inside, he was going, "Oh, that's terrible," right? But he stayed really calm and, you know, was really reassuring. So that was nice. So anyway, fire finally gets there. They get me.
That's actually part of it too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who can remain the coolest? I mean, that's back in the day when you were picking medics, your medic needed to be the coolest. And when I say coolest, I mean just everyone knows what that is. Calm. Just calm under whatever. And even in the situation when they're talking to you, it's calm. Kind of what that's what you want, because you can train them to do anything.
Yes. Yeah.
We should look for stuff like that, and we only actually see it once we get in, and it's in those moments. And I noticed you said something about the time that you went in, your sergeant went in, and then that your buddy of yours came in behind you. Though we're talking about a matter of seconds, but we're also talking about three different stories.
Everybody had, and
they were all right. They were all absolutely right through their eyes. There's no way you could have seen that you got hit or what you got hit by from a muzzle.
Right.
Everything. That's why it's always, we do the same thing y'all do after, especially if somebody gets hurt, we get a time to settle down. Because you got to pull that together before you start asking questions and stuff like that. So for those that aren't, they've never worn the uniform, especially when we get in a dust up, that little period in between all that, that's so everyone can calm down. And say what's, you know, how it actually went down, and then when those stories don't match up, they're like, well, they're actually there, they're just snapshots in time.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, we actually had one of the people running a kind of after action training, and she held up a dollar bill and she said, you know, Marcus, what are you seeing? And you start describing what's on that dollar bill. And I'm looking at it as well. And I'm like, that's not what I'm seeing, but I was seeing it from a different angle.
That's good. Who taught you that?
One of the women who did an after action training.
That's pretty good. I'm gonna steal that one. Is is that all right? I'm
of course. I stole it. Why not?
Yeah.
But you know, it's funny, Marcus. You know, like you mentioned about staying calm. I actually was really proud because when I started working for Tempe, a couple of my friends were involved in a shooting. We were just a few blocks away, and my one friend was so calm on the radio. Had I not heard the gunfire, I wouldn't have known that they were involved in a shooting because he was so calm. And I said, well, if that ever happens to me, I'm going to make sure that I stay really calm. But as it turns out, I think I was a little too calm. I actually have the audio on it. It said, to Paul 13, I need an ambulance. And, you know, then Rich said, you know, shots fired, subjects down. And I said, to Paul 13, I've been stabbed. And so a number of other officers told me that they thought I probably was nicked in the hand because I was so calm. And then a lot of people asked me if I was in shock. I don't think I was in shock. I think I was as prepared for that moment as I could be. And that's part of why I stayed so calm. But as I was getting loaded into the ambulance, I get in there and you know how EMTs like to get you naked. So EMT whips out the...
you do that with those shears.
Yeah. He pulls the top of my shirt and I said, wait. And he's like, what? And I said, you know, I'm super modest, right? So I said, can you just cut it down to like right here? And he said, no, but I'm going to leave your bra on. And I was like, oh, thank God I wore a bra to work today because my friend was in the ambulance with me and I didn't want to be...
Hey, I feel like there should be an added benefit for putting your life on the line, being a paramedic. And if you get a lady in there where, you know, you have the opportunity to save her life and that happens.
You get to see her boobs.
Yeah. You know, I mean, there's kind of like little gifts that God throws at you every now and again.
No. That's
not right. Oh, God. Some of my friends probably saw him in the emergency room. So
I got one question. Did you take advantage of the situation just a little bit to get even with some of your buddies and fake die?
No, I didn't do that.
Oh, have you ever heard of anybody doing that? Because it's a great story. I know a few people that are like, hey man, you're a fake die on somebody, like when you're, because they've been hurt before. When you get hurt again, you gotta realize how far it takes. Look, I grew up in a weird environment. You can't believe it. All right. And I know you did too.
Yeah.
Part of this. So yeah, there's some things out there and tell you the strangest thing that's happened to me is I had a funeral. You ever wonder what people say at your funeral? That's weird too.
Yeah.
Well, find that out.
Yeah. Marcus, when he was in Operation Red Wing, there were several news outlets that had reported him dead. So there was people already preparing.
Yeah. Like when you find out what people say about you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Back to your story real quick though. Can you explain what was happening to the victim? Because that really shows, I don't know, just it paints the picture of what was going on in that apartment. It was really demonic and dark in there.
Yeah, it really was, Melanie. And, you know, it was funny because as he leaped out of the darkness and I saw that, you know, my first thought was, oh, shit, you know, not because I was scared, but because I knew I couldn't get out of the way and I was going to be stabbed. So like I said, you know, you think so quickly. And I was thinking, you know, he killed her and he's trying to kill me. Well, when he took off, I'm thinking, how are we going to get to her with this? What I thought was going to be a long threat turned out, obviously it wasn't. So what ended up happening is when my friend Rich ran around the building, he busted open the security door with the battering ram and they were able to get to her and save her life. So it turns out she was stabbed 11 times, one of which was, and I think I sent you a picture of the knife. One was a through and through. It went entirely through her body and just narrowly missed her heart. Turns out that was the same knife he stabbed me with. So I had those added concerns there. But I have to tell you that the trauma doctor in this case attributed not only my survival, but her survival to our physical conditioning. She was a competitive gymnast.
And wasn't she tied to a chair, if I remember correctly?
So she was bound, but she was on the ground. So he had duct taped her arms behind her back. And it turns out that he was holding her against her will for 4 days. And he had been torturing her and beating her and cutting her with a machete. And he would tell her repeatedly that he was going to kill her. He said, I'll just use first names, but he said, I'm not Matthew and you're not Brittany. I'm here to slay demons and I'm going to kill you. So she believed she was going to die.
And when he had texted the sister that they, or the sister got a text from her saying that they had gone to the movies and everything was okay, but that was actually from him texting from her phone.
You all know PXG for their superior golf clubs, but have you checked out their apparel line too? Introducing PXG Apparel, where style meets performance. I just wore the navy blue digital camo PXG polo on the course, and let me tell you, I fell in love with it. Got countless compliments, and the quality, the fit, the style are all unbeatable. These pieces are built for the course, but also perfect for any occasion after the fact. Don't worry about grabbing drinks after or going out to eat. Doesn't matter. You're gonna be looking good. It's stylish, from polos to cozy sweaters to pants, hats, jackets, and so much more. It's all premium style head to toe. Whether you're hitting the greens or you're hitting the town, PXG Apparel has got you covered. Trust me, I promise you'll love it. If you're ready to finally upgrade your wardrobe, discover the PXG Spring Summer 2024 collection at PXG.com. And don't forget to use the code TNQ at checkout to enjoy a nice 10% discount on all apparel. Don't wait. Go ahead to PXG.com and use promo code TNQ at checkout today.
Yeah, I suspect that's the case, Melanie. I didn't get 100% confirmation on who sent it.
Yeah, but obviously she wasn't okay. I mean, she was being tortured at that time.
Right.
That is so scary. That whole story, ever since you've shared that with me, it has just stuck. And I have a sister that went through a really abusive relationship with a man that sounds very similar to that. So it really hits home with me that kind of stuff happens.
You killed him, right?
Yes.
All right, good job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the thing is, I think I may mention this, Melanie, when we spoke, is that while I was at home recovering, so it took about 3 weeks for me to recover because I had some complications.
Where did it hit you? Did it get you in the carotid? Did it get you in your lung?
Just missed my carotid by less than an inch, and I got hit right over the left clavicle. I actually sent a picture over to you guys on that. But yeah, I was really fortunate on that. And I just forgot where I was going with that. I was going to say while I was at home recovering, because it took about 3 weeks at home, the detective called me and said, hey, I wanted to let you know that the family of the suspect dropped off a card for you. And what do you want me to do with that? And so I said, well, Vic, and this is a true story. I said, I want you to open it and make sure there's no anthrax in there. And I want you to read it. And if you think that it will be upsetting to me, then I don't want it. And he said, okay. So he said, it's good. I'm going to send it over. So sure enough, they sent a card. It was really nice. It said, you know, they hope that we're all healing and so on and so forth, and that their hearts go out to us. But the last line in it was pretty heart-wrenching. They said, thank you for saving Brittany's life and giving us a reason to live. And that was the suspect's parents. And so, you know, I think he came from a very good family. And from the best that I could ascertain, it was the break that he had. He was dabbling in illicit drugs. I also received a letter from his cousin, who's an attorney, a while after the fact. And he said he had a newfound obsession with the occult, and that he believed that that was part of my premonition that day, and probably helped to save my life. But he said that once he opened that door, he couldn't close it. And so I think it was a break. And I think it's really unfortunate that, you know, it was a 26-year-old guy with his whole life ahead of him, you know, and he had a family who loved him.
Does that happen more often than we know?
The what part of it, Marcus?
You get twisted off in those occults and stuff like that.
Oh gosh, you know, thankfully I haven't seen much of that, so I couldn't really tell you.
Yeah, that's so scary. I mean, people that, because you can't help someone that is, like, if that was your son and he was going through that. My son's 26. And you're just thinking, yeah, like, if he spun off, and when, how do you even help that?
Right. Yeah, I understand his sister is a nurse, and she believed he may have been bipolar, but he was never diagnosed and obviously not on any kind of medication for that.
That is terrifying.
Yeah.
How long did it take you to heal up again?
So, you know, Marcus, I spent 3 weeks at home. I went in on light duty, and unfortunately, I was assigned to desk duty doing absolutely nothing, which proved to be really challenging, you know, just sitting there ruminating about the incident and having people come by, some to check on me, others to get the scoop. And it was really awkward. It was an overwhelming time, too. I'm sure that you experienced.
I agree with you on what you said wholeheartedly on that. I think after someone gets into something and they heal up, you got to go back out. Back out there.
Yes. Yeah.
Because if they're sitting there, and all of us in the uniform know this, right? There's certain jobs that get filled up by people who are busted up. You just don't want them to get stuck in there. Like, right. If you go in there busted up with after you've been beat down, then that attitude kind of goes with it. But yeah. I was lucky enough to get both. I got stuck back out in the field, and then they're like, no, you got the desk.
Mm-hmm.
And it helped me mentally considerably, because the guys and girls that are still on the street, they think different.
They think
different.
Yeah.
Those are the edge walkers. They're out in it with the demons, right? They have to be in there all the freaking time. So if they come across a little harsh or hard, that's for a reason. They don't mean anything by it. And then those of us that are transitioning out and in, that are still in the life, you got to wear both those hats.
Right.
And if you get put in there, but just on the sheer fact that you got your ass kicked, because that's how we got in there, which is part of the job, right?
It's exceptionally
brutal for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It absolutely is. Yes, ma'am. I get that feeling. I know that feeling.
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah. You just got a great attitude, I guess. That's what they always said to me. I'm like, all right, cool.
Yeah. I did the 3 weeks, and probably physically could use a little more time. I had a pretty significant concussion. You know, I just couldn't take it anymore, just sitting there doing nothing. So I said, hey, just put me back on the street. You know, it's easy to get a doctor's release on that. So I went back. I was riding patrol, you know, feeling better than I had since the incident, and feeling like I had a purpose again, which was really awesome. I was back in patrol probably about 2 weeks, or, I'm sorry, 2 months, and I ended up hitting a wall. And that's where I actually really struggled, was at that point. I mean, right after the fact, I was doing great, feeling pretty good. I won't say that I didn't contend with some things. I do have, actually, ironically, my friend Mike Malpass, I had told Melanie about. Mike's a big SWAT operator out of Phoenix. And when he came to see me in the hospital, he said, you know, Julie, I can't tell you what normal is, but whatever you go through will be normal. And so I had to remind myself of that, you know, that the things that I was experiencing were just normal. I just hadn't experienced them before. You know, I was fortunate to survive. I think I survived because I was prepared, physically, mentally, and spiritually prepared. I was in the best shape I could be in on that day. You know, I was 100% present in the moment. My life wasn't going along swimmingly, but there wasn't one cell in my body that wasn't focused on surviving that situation. It was funny because one of the counselors I talked with said, well, that must have been scary, you know, sitting there thinking that you're going to die. I said, I wasn't thinking I was going to die. I was too focused on living, you know, and then having a plan. You know, I did a lot of really good things because of my training and having a plan in place. But 2 months later, when I hit the wall, I was on duty in full uniform. And I started crying for no apparent reason as I'm driving around, and I couldn't stop. And so I ended up, it was interesting. I met up with one of the critical incident team sergeants, and I was crying, and nobody had ever seen me cry before. And I no sooner get one sentence out than a call of five people standing together in a parking lot comes out, and it's my call. And so sergeant looks at me and says, and I'm thinking they're going to tell me to get my stuff and go to the station. And the sergeant says, I'll follow you to this call. So I went to the call. Afterwards, I ended up meeting with my some stuff. He was a really great guy. And he said, hey, you know, pack up your stuff and let's find somebody else for you to talk with and get you some support. So we did that. I was really fortunate in the people who helped me through after the aftermath. And here I am, you know, I was really fortunate. I mean, because I've seen a lot of cops, and sure, Marcus, you've seen a ton of soldiers really struggle for long, long periods of time. And I saw a lot of folks struggle. I still see people struggling that don't get the support that they need, you know?
If you boil it all down, it's that constant reminder. What happens is we get isolated.
Mm-hmm.
And the worst thing to me is they shovel those pills on me, so I couldn't complain. You know, that takes your wanting to complain away.
Uh-huh.
And then we're not designed to be isolated. Even with us, you got to have your swim buddy. You got to have your partner, right? There's always somebody constantly nagging on you. We have to have that. I don't know what mechanism that is in our brain or our body, but it goes like that.
Yeah.
And if you have that good, if you spend no time developing or training anybody to feel sorry for themselves or that that's okay to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Human condition will get addicted to that.
Yeah.
It just I've been around seeing too much of it now to where I was fortunate enough. I got hit with nothing but positive because they didn't really know what I had. They didn't know it was a problem. They didn't just go like, hey, we're doing it this way. And it worked out just like yours.
Yeah.
They didn't know what they didn't know.
And right.
We did it this way. It wasn't protocol. It is protocol now, but you can't have, now you know that it made you stronger. It's like, hey, you had to be tapped and broke open, not broken down.
Right.
That's when they said it to me like that. I was like, broke open, because I had to get what was in there out to be strong. Yeah. And that's a human condition as well.
Right.
And we respond to that. Like now, when you walk in the door and people see you, like, man, she got stabbed.
She survived.
It does. Yeah. She got stabbed and survived. That is a qual. That's a merit badge. You know, we collect scars down here, especially the uniforms. So now when you're walking around, that's street cred. I mean, that's all you have to have. You got to get hit.
Yeah.
No one likes to go through it. And it, because of what you're with it, right? Yeah.
Well, you have to get back up.
Well, you got to get back up. And that's what she did. And that just like with anything else, like if you go through anything else, is getting your ass back up and it'll work itself back in there.
Yeah.
Are you training officers now on being prepared? Because I mean, from this whole story, the biggest takeaway is that you were so prepared for this, and that is how you survived this. And they like, you need to be like a role model for everybody else. And I see officers all the time that are completely out of shape and just look completely unprepared.
It's kind of ironic you ask me, Melanie, and, because it reminds me of, you know, what people say and how it impacts you. Kind of funny. In the aftermath, some of the media outlets were reporting that the strange twist to this story was that I was a martial arts expert and I still got stabbed. Well, we all know that action's faster than reaction, and there's no strange twist. The fact that if someone's hiding in the dark around a blind corner, you don't know they're there, you're going to get stabbed. So whereas they questioned my training, I knew that it was my training that saved my life. Because I knew if I was in a knife fight, I would probably be cut, but it would be what I did next that mattered.
Earn more and save more with Navy Federal Credit Union. Their certificate options offer competitive rates, helping your savings grow faster. With flexible terms and low minimum deposits, Navy Federal gives you more choices for reaching your financial goals. If you need funding for home improvement projects or you're just consolidating debt, you can borrow up to 100% of your home's equity with a fixed rate home equity loan, or you can opt out for a home equity line of credit with zero closing costs. Both options are designed to make life's big expenses more manageable. Discover how Navy Federal can help you achieve your financial aspirations. Visit NavyFederal.org to learn more today. At Navy Federal, our members are the mission. Navy Federal is insured by the NCUA, Equal Housing Lender. Membership is required, terms and conditions apply, and loans are subject to approval.
And I feel like I did the best job I could. And kind of funny, we talk about how people just know what to say. And a lot of times, I think, Marcus, you were alluding to, it's getting back out there with people who have been there and they understand. But sometimes it's somebody who hasn't necessarily been through that. And I wanted to share something with you, because one of the most profound things that happened in the aftermath was one of our commanders, who was first female ever on our SWAT team, sent me this note. And it said, "Hi, Julie, I just wanted to say that I'm glad you're okay. I admit, when I first heard, I was in no way at all surprised that you had dealt with the situation and walked away the victor, and that you did not hesitate to go towards the danger. I picture you decisively and forcefully dealing with the threat. Unfortunately, you were injured, and that sucks, but you will come out of this stronger and wiser. Thank you for being prepared for this deadly encounter. Thank you for taking personal responsibility to ensure you would survive. And thank you for continuing to be a role model for our officers. All the best, Fran." And it just amazes me that somebody who hadn't necessarily been there just knew exactly what to say. And I mean, to thank somebody for being prepared to save their own life, I mean, really says, "I give a crap about you," right? And that note meant more to me than almost anything. And I received a lot of letters and cards, even from total strangers, which was really nice. I'm sure you experienced that, Marcus.
Oh, the ones who talk the most noise, they just can't believe that it can be done. And this is how we all know that you are a martial artist and that you were well trained, is because I'm talking to you. and no matter how hard you train, when it comes down to it, it's that action in itself. When you actually have to get out there and road test it, trust me, that goes down again. If you ever get in that situation again, you know exactly how it'll play out. Girl, you'll dominate that. You know how many times that's played in your head? You know, we go through that to where it doesn't become a problem. I instead of thinking about it, I played it in my head until I got to the point where I reversed it, as to where I haven't run into it yet.
Yeah.
When I do, I'll have been so focused and I'll have visualized the situation so much that it gave me a confidence
to step in
it. Yeah. That's why when you talk and you teach, there's a tone in your voice. And like, hey, look, I just didn't, not only I read this somewhere, I actually had to go through, I road tested it.
Yes.
That's a street cred. That's a bold you subscribe.
Yeah. Well, and her just adamant knowing that she needed to be prepared physically, mentally, spiritually.
Oh, you were
all of those.
How about
things.
That?
Yeah.
Like, you took it. Thank you. That is a beautiful way you just said that. This is how you know that you had all three of those combined, because you're smiling and it's not a problem.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, people when they stabbed, they wouldn't have lived, they'd have died interior, you know, mentally.
Well, and just there is an innate fear of darkness. I mean, when that man was under a complete, you know, a lot of people say they don't believe in demons and all that kind of stuff. I do. I've seen it. And I can picture myself being in that situation. That is pure. Most people would have pure fear, but you didn't, because you had the preparedness and you, in that morning, you had that instinct that something was going to happen and you accepted it. And you knew that no matter what happened, whatever you were going to encounter that day, that you were going to fight through it and survive.
Right.
That is so powerful because most of the time that fear is just paralyzing and you don't react with, you know, anybody else could have been in that situation and just fallen backwards and been stabbed to death because you were, mm-hmm. you had everything going against you. It was complete darkness. He leapt out from an unknown place. You thought he was somewhere else. And I remember when you had told the story at the ranch, it wasn't it like really slippery floors, like ceramic or,
yeah, it was a ceramic floor. Yeah.
Like this story has stuck in my head for all these years so much because it was just so scary for me, not ever wearing a uniform or I've never trained in martial arts or anything like that. Like I can just picture myself being paralyzed in fear, but because you trained so much and you trained all three of those things, Marcus talks about this all the time. You have to train your mind, your body, and your spirit at all times. You had all those going for you that not only did you defeat this spiritually, you defeated it mentally and physically as well. And you survived it because you had all of those three. Yeah. I think an awesome story of survival.
Yeah. Well, thank you. And you know, Melanie, one of the things that I found in the period that I struggled, I don't know if you know this, but there's actually a whole science around happiness and you can get a degree in happiness, which makes me laugh. But the three things that,
I mean, I know about that. I didn't, but when I found out, I was like, well, thank God they got that.
Yeah. Yeah. So
where do they hide them after they get out?
Right. Well, the three things that they find that make most people happy are gratitude, our connection to others, and giving back. So I really started focusing on those three things when I struggled, and I found it was really helpful. And while I was presenting, I was asked to teach or present on this critical incident around the country and a little bit internationally as well. And a number of agencies started asking me what I did for my training. And so when I shared the information, they ended up asking me to help with their defensive tactics teams. And so that morphed into my business going from where I thought I'd be teaching women self-defense predominantly when I retired to right now, I mostly teach police officers defensive tactics. And then obviously I do that as my current career. But in order to give back and really have a sense of purpose, I started the Soul Summit, which is a law enforcement training program specific to women in law enforcement. And our focus is on the three areas that we know save lives, which are defensive tactics, firearms, and tactical emergency casualty care. But like you were alluding to earlier, Marcus, it's so much more than that. You know, at the ranch, it's more than just going out and shooting with these amazing instructors. It's the connections that they make. It's the support that they find there. You know, in policing, like the military, we talk about a brotherhood and sisterhood, but in a lot of agencies, that doesn't really exist. And so what we find is that at the summit, the participants find that support and that connection with others. And it's unbelievable the changes. I mean, I don't think we've had one participant who hasn't said that the summit has literally changed their life, not just their career, but their life. And so that's a good thing.
Love that. I love
that. We all volunteer for that.
Yes, I love that.
Yeah, it's true. If you want to change your life, you got to bring somebody new in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So have you written a book on this?
I have not.
You haven't. So you're just going around and sharing it within the community, the police force community. How can our listeners find out more about you or help you with the Soul Summit or?
So I have a website. It comes up under two things. One is Artemis, Artemis, the number 4, women.com, or my name, JulieWorniak.com. And it would take you to my website. So, and we have partnered with the Emergency Responders Assistance Program, and they run trauma seminars for officers who have been involved in their families who have been involved in critical incidents. And so we do have nonprofit status for the summit. Awesome. If anyone wants to make a donation, that would be amazing.
So I have a question for you.
Okay.
I think about this a lot, and I'm time of reflection. After you go through something, you kind of reflect on it, especially when you have to present it to different types of people at different ages. Like when you walk up to, if you had to teach my daughter something, I mean, taking the freaking glasses off, grab by the shoulder, look square in the eyes, be like, one thing you always do, no matter what, you always do this. And this will help out considerably. You got one of those yet?
I'd say the hard things. You have to do the hard things. You have to push yourself, because we know when you push yourself so hard physically that it makes you stronger mentally and it prepares you for the worst case scenario.
I have to ask, are you still close with your sisters?
I am very close with my sisters and my mom. Yeah.
My dad, after all this, that's kind of like, man.
Okay, she grew up scrapping the boys and her.
Yeah.
That's a great point. It makes you work on your relationship skills.
Yeah.
Like after you go through something too.
Sure. Yeah. 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 Because this wasn't just my journey. You know, I wasn't the only one who went through this. And I mean, you know, the other thing that I failed to mention is while I was prepared for the incident itself, and I had help through the aftermath, is all of the officers who were there with me, the EMTs that responded, the hospital staff. I mean, if you listen, and I know, Melanie, you heard it, our dispatchers were phenomenal. So it wasn't just me who was prepared that day. They were all prepared for that day. And, you know, it's really, for me, it's not about being prepared to survive a lethal encounter. It's about being prepared to survive a lethal encounter on your worst day. Because we know Murphy's Law says that's exactly when that crap's going to happen, right?
Yeah, for sure.
I'll tell you what, it's a lot of the organizations we don't talk about, or they're protected on purpose. But from where the scene's at and everything that goes down, the most valuable thing we have in America is someone willing to help you.
Yes.
It's teamed up and trained their butt off for that moment. If this happens to you, man, we got a team standing by that will patch this thing. You know how hard it is to patch up a human body if you don't know what you're doing? I mean, think you can die on you quick.
And yeah.
We have not only people, but we got a box truck. It's labeled. It's got lights and sirens. So you know what that is. If one of those is sitting behind you with the lights on, get the hell out of the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm talking about, like, police are showing up and you're not involved. Get the hell out of the way.
You can't stand. When
yeah, man. Let me tell you something. Until you've had to lay, until you're laying there in your own blood, and you're praying that somebody in your family, the people, our people, send somebody. And we do that. Not only that, we do it so well that our people complain about it when it's not done right. That's how good we got at it.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, just when you think about it out loud, it's amazing that anybody would step up to help anybody. And we actually do that, and we do it well. So those people that don't get any of that credit, man, thanks. Like the dispatch.
Yeah.
Like man, they don't get nothing. They don't get anything. No one ever talks about them.
Yeah. And can you imagine sitting behind,
they have to hear everything. Oh.
Yeah. Wanting to reach through. And, you know, those are my friends. And, you know, that was hard for them. So.
And you get used to that voice. There's something not being, when we don't ever see their face, but you can hear a voice, man. And when you hear it and you know it, because they send, like, it's a helpful thing. Like, I know when I hear that freaking voice that the cavalry is coming. And it's powerful for us, for sure.
If you want to hear a funny dispatch, you can Google Marcus Luttrell 911 call.
Wow. Oh yeah,
there is a hilarious. It's gone viral recently on TikTok. This happened before we met in 2010. This happened before that. Marcus, someone killed his dog, and
it's not really funny.
It's a horrible story. What's funny is the dispatch call, because Marcus called. And he was in pursuit of the guys who killed them. And he's chasing them down on these back roads in the, I mean, middle of back road East Texas. Dark as can be.
If I'd have known they were going to be recording that damn thing, I'd have said something a lot cooler. You know what I'm talking about? We don't ever think about that.
And he's explaining exactly where he is, and he's saying he needs officers to, you know, come to where he is, and he has eyes on the people who killed his dog. And the dispatch is saying, okay, we have officers on our way, you can pull over, please don't continue, you know, they don't want him involved. And he's like, I know what I'm doing and I'm okay. I just need you to send the officers to come meet me. And he's going like 100 miles an hour. And she is kind of freaking out. And she's like, sir, I need to pull over and not be involved in this. And he ends up holding them at gunpoint until the...
Oh, that's awesome. Do they have any idea who was following?
No.
Wow.
No, they didn't.
That must have been a rude awakening.
Oh,
it was
very rude awakening.
It was, yeah, when they found out. But it's, you know.
But the 911 call is funny to hear.
Thank God for the police. Yeah. Like, I'm a huge fan of that. And that's not saying they hadn't had to whip my ass a time or two growing up. Let's be real upfront about that. And I appreciate them for doing that. I was a better man because of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we love them around here. Uh-huh. Like, you have to have them.
Yeah.
If you don't have them, like, this is my favorite thing. Like, people who don't like the police, once you get the police out of the way, then you can have to deal with me.
Yeah.
They're not the mean things around here. There are other things that are a lot meaner than they are that they actually protect from the criminals. Because nothing more, you know, I don't even have to, that's a rabbit all together. But thank you for what you do.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for being so prepared and being a role model for others and showing what being a survivor looks like.
Yeah. You got dealt that cross. You picked it up and walked with it. That's exactly what that means. Instead of letting it crush you. I mean, you did it exactly what you were supposed to do. You picked it up and you're still running with it. Keep going.
Thank you. I will.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on. And Hunter will splice in the pictures. And if you have any video or maybe even the dispatch call, we can splice it into the YouTube.
Okay. You don't know how much I appreciate the opportunity. I mean, I was like so nervous.
No, this was great. Thank you so much for taking the time to share your story. And I think it'll resonate with a lot of people. So thank you.
Yeah.
All right, girl. God bless you.
Yes.
All right, you too. Thank you so much. Thanks, Hunter.
Of course.
Right. Take care.